You can add to our conversations on Travel with Rick Steves anytime at the listener message board in the radio section at ricksteves.com. You can also email us at radio@ricksteves.com or leave a message at 877-333-RICK. Right now, let's take a few minutes to check in with listeners who've contacted us recently with comments or concerns about things they've heard on the show. Catherine's calling in from Nashville, Tennessee. Catherine, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. Well, I think Turkey is a difficult country. And I work in the field of international education, and I think why we travel to understand and to be understood. And Turkey looks modern and Western, but its traditional and religious and historical values sometimes cause us to make big mistakes when we go there.
Okay, so Catherine, you're calling in response to the interview I had with Lolly, I think,
yes,
about visiting villages?
Yes, yes.
In eastern Turkey. Did we make it sound easier and simpler than you think it would be for an American woman venturing through eastern Turkey?
Yes, in my opinion, I traveled with a group of eight educators to Turkey recently, mm-hmm. and we were in Kayseri, Cappadocia. We were, you know, we're in about 10 cities. But mm-hmm. the further east we got, the more I feel like that our dress was, we were, you know, we were stared at, and that we didn't want how we appeared to come between any cultural understanding that we could learn. So I felt like that one day one of the members, she wore a sleeveless dress,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of, you know, was an ordeal the whole day, because when people are staring at you,
yes,
it's not, you're not breaking down.
You know, that's interesting because, you know, I, in my enthusiasm, a lot of times I think I make it sound a little easier and happier than it might really be. And as you go, because I want people to venture out there, but
of course.
I think you're right. As you go further east in Turkey, you get into more conservative areas, more strict and fundamentalist Islamic areas. And even when I was a kid traveling through Turkey with my girlfriend, I remember some days we would leave the hotel and we'd realize, we'd get about half a block and we'd realize, no, we got to go back and you've got to put on something more modest because you just, it's hot, but you can't wear that shirt or we're going to be causing problems wherever we walk.
And this is why they provide us with the cardboard robes at the Blue Mosque and the headscarves. You know, they provide us this because they know we're dressing incorrectly. They're trying to teach us their culture by providing, you know, special clothing.
So would your suggestion, Catherine, be if somebody is going to venture, if you go to the tourist areas in Turkey, it's really no issue.
Mm-mm.
But if you're going away from that, especially in the east, are you saying it's just not safe and comfortable for a woman to go there? Or women, if they do decide to go there, should be more careful in how they present themselves?
I would say probably long sleeve shirt, long sleeve skirt.
Yeah.
Long skirt, that would probably make the day go a whole lot easier. And, you know, what we're trying to do is break down the cultural stereotypes. But if the clothes cause an issue, and this isn't so for men, you know, it's really so for women. But as a modern American woman, I mean, I want to wear a tank top, but I know I shouldn't.
Well, the same thing's true with modern Turkish women. I've been with modern Turkish women from big cities, and when they get into a conservative town, it's almost like they're making a point. I'm a modern Turkish woman. I can dress like a modern American woman. But the fact is, every man in town and most of the women are staring at them with sort of a gasp, like, oh, you cannot be in public like this. It's just inappropriate.
And we spent the night in Turkish homes, and that was fabulous, because then you get a really, you know, up-close look. But I just think, to me, travel, it's sort of soft diplomacy. Every time an American goes out there, I mean, Turkey borders, what, Iran, Iraq, and Syria?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're trying to break down barriers at this time.
Yep.
And anything that we can do that can just say, I understand your culture.
Yes, that's
We don't have to embrace it.
No, but dressing appropriately and acting appropriately, that's a very important travel skill. So,
okay, great.
Thank you very much, Catherine.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
And call again if you have any other comments, okay?
Okay, will do.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Rick.
And after we did our interview about the Balkans and how it related to World War I, we got an interesting email from Anna, Alexandra, and Dusica from Philadelphia. And they wrote to us this. We are Serbian Americans. We've been in the United States for 15 years. We're writing in response to your World War I in the Balkans radio show. We were displeased with your comparison of Franz Ferdinand and his wife to Prince Charles and Princess Diana. Charles and Diana were symbolic heads of state, unlike Ferdinand and the Habsburgs, who were heads of government. Charles and Diana were celebrities without much influence in foreign politics. Your comparison is inappropriate. You also called Gavrilo Princip a terrorist, which we do not approve of. He was a patriot and a national, who fought for sovereignty for his country and against imperialism. Well, Anna, Alexandra, and Dusica from Philadelphia, thank you. Those are very good points, and it's understandable that Serbs like you would consider Princip not to be a terrorist, but a freedom fighter, a national hero, a patriot. In fact, when you go to Sarajevo today, you'll find streets named after Princip. But the fact is, he was a freedom fighter who was resorting to what we consider terrorist tactics, and they wanted to assassinate a visiting head of state or a visiting royal to get their way politically. And what happened was they killed Franz Ferdinand and his wife, and that's considered, from our point of view, a terrorist. But I understand that one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. We Americans had to shoot in from the bushes when we were fighting the Brits. They might have considered us terrorists, and we might have considered our guys to be patriots. Every empire has angry people on their fringes. It's nothing new. They just call them different things. 2,000 years ago, barbarians were upset with the Romans, and the Romans called these people barbarians to belittle them. The Habsburgs had their terrorists, and they called them anarchists to belittle them. They weren't necessarily crazy people. They just didn't like being ruled by a foreign power. The Serbs, back in the time of when Franz Ferdinand was assassinated by Princip, they were ruled by German-speaking emperors, and they were Serbian-speaking people that didn't feel they had a government that understood or represented them. Of course, today, the United States is dealing with terrorists who are outside of our borders and nipping at our heels, as people outside of an empire often do. This is history, this is what we learn, and it's great to get feedback from people who have a different perspective so we can learn from each other as well as from our travels. Thank you, Anna, Alexandra, and Dusica from Philadelphia. This is Travel with Rick Steves, and it's great every once in a while to take a moment and just hear your feedback. I just love sharing all this travel information with all these great experts and travel writers and so on that join us. And a lot of times we'll say things that you want to give us some feedback on, pro or con. We just want to hear from you. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And you can email us at radio@ricksteves.com. And Mary's calling in from Live Oaks in Florida. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Now, you're calling in response to which interview that we did?
The young lady who wrote a book about RVing across the country.
Christina Nielsen, yes. She was living in her RV around the country.
Yes. I actually am tractor-trailer driving cross-country right now, and I kind of live in my RV here, built an RV. But back when, a few years ago, I decided that I was going to go on a long sabbatical and take my own pick-em-up truck and get all my camping gear and go cross-country and visit all the places that I could not go when I was driving tractor-trailer.
So you tented around the country then?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, when I was young, 6 years old, I was sick. I became sick with rheumatic fever, and I remember the doctor telling my parents that I was going to be blind by the time I'm 21 years old and that I probably wouldn't have a long life. And that scared me at 6 years old, and that stayed with me. So when I was 19, I took off, and I never stopped.
And you're still going, and you're a little older than 19 now, and you're still seeing the world.
Well, I'll be 61 here in a couple of weeks.
Good for you. What a indomitable spirit.
I do. I have a lot of courage and determination that I was going to go see everything that I could possibly go see.
Well, I'm glad that our interviews, like we did with Christina Nielsen there, can inspire people to get out. And whether you're traveling around the world or just around the state to, get out of your comfort zone and accelerate their lives by traveling.
Yes, and I highly recommend it. And the way that I always travel is just with a tent. I don't want to do the RV because, for me, I'm frugal. I don't even want to stay in campgrounds if I can help it. I will look for wilderness areas to stay in. And that way there's no cost. And the reason I have the pick-em-up truck is because I can carry my water with me, my purifier.
Okay, so you tossed your camp gear in the back of your truck and you just hit the road.
That's correct.
All right. Where's your favorite place to pitch a tent?
Oh, my favorite place in all the places that I have been to was the Arches National Park.
Oh,
I just fell in love with the Arches. Oh, my gosh, that was the ultimate.
I can just picture you stepping out of your tent in the morning at the Arches and stretching high and just thinking, life is good.
Life is good. Right. As a matter of fact, there was a place in New Mexico when I was there, It was called El Moro. I don't know. Many people have not heard of El Moro, but it's the land of fire and ice, and there's a cauldron, extinct volcano there, and there's actually ice underneath the volcano where there's caves of ice down there. A very fascinating area. There's a wilderness area there, and I ended up camping in that wilderness area by myself. And I spent my birthday there a couple of years ago under the full moon. It was really a scary time because there was nobody else around. I had to drive so far back in the woods to get there. And when I came out, back out into civilization, I heard that there were 4 bear taken out of there previously, like a couple of weeks before that. There were wolves that were spotted there. There was a panther spotted in that same area. And God was so good.
I think you have a protecting angel or something like that. So you can inspire a lot of young people with have a attitude that you have about get out there and sleep under the stars and embrace life. Mary from Live Oaks, Florida, thanks for your call.
Well, you're very welcome, Rick.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
We're checking in with listeners like you right now, people who've contacted us by phone at 877-333-7425 or emailed us at radio@ricksteves.com to talk a little more about things they've heard on recent editions of Travel with Rick Steves. And Jerry is calling in from Reelsville in Indiana. Jerry, thanks for your call.
Yes, Rick. In 2011, we went on a Mediterranean cruise and docked at the country of Monaco.
Uh-huh.
And as we got off the ship, we were met by a little trolley called Hop On, Hop Off.
Oh, yeah.
And you paid $5 for earplugs. And when you got on the trolley, you plugged them into a little speaker system, and it gave you information about where you were going.
A little choo-choo train, yeah. And it's a hop-on, hop-off, and you've got the tape-recorded narration. You can listen to it in 10 different languages. If it's boring, you can hear it in Korean if you want to.
Yes. And you hop off anytime you want to see something.
I like that, because when you get off the ship...
Another one will come along in 20 minutes and pick you up and take you...
So when you get off the ship there, it's a little bit of a hike to get to the Jacques Cousteau Museum, but you can ride that hop-on, hop-off choo-choo and get off and see the great aquarium.
That's what we did.
What did you think about that aquarium?
Oh, magnificent.
It is amazing, isn't it?
The huge plastic octopus, when you first go in, all over the ceiling and coming down the walls.
Oh, it befits Jacques Cousteau. I mean, that's who it's named
after,
isn't it? Yeah. You go into that aquarium and it just feels like you're introduced to the wonderland of all that life underwater.
Yes.
Yeah.
Plus, he had the stuffed Mediterranean penguin display.
No.
It was about 15 inches high and cute as a button.
Cute as a button, those Mediterranean penguins. And then you can hop back on that little choo-choo train and you can go over to the casino and you can go up to the viewpoint and you can see the changing of the guard. It's like a little toy soldier changing of the guard there in Monaco, isn't it?
Well, yes, and you go right through the royal grounds.
Yeah.
And they told about how the custom used to be in Monaco, duck hunting. And everybody got out and shot ducks.
Probably no more ducks.
Exactly. That's what
that's the downside of that.
Grace.
That's the downside of that. But you
Princess
know that
Grace told Prince Rainier that was just terrible and they should stop that and protect the ducks. And so Prince Rainier did.
Uh-huh.
And now the royal yard is full of ducks.
Well, that's the nice thing about a situation where you got a prince and a princess. They can save the ducks.
Right.
Now, when you are cruising, it is a beautiful thing. The ship docks right there in the town. And then the next day, you're right there in Villefranche, or you're going right there to Naples or right there to Barcelona. I just love that. And then you've got all of these little hop-on, hop-off vehicles where you can just hop on and hop off all the way through the town and get back in time for dinner on the ship.
And learn all about everything.
That's right. Hey, Jerry, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Call again sometime. Happy travels.
Bye-bye.
We got an email from Marilyn in Columbus, Ohio. After hearing our interview about fjord country in Norway, she writes, I was horrified to hear you say on the radio that Ålesund, Norway, is a forgettable city. Absolutely not. It's one of the 13 great Art Nouveau architecture cities in Europe and one of the gems of the Art Nouveau movement of 100 years ago. I made a special trip there just to see the architecture, and it was breathtaking. Okay, Marilyn, you're right. It is a great city from an architectural point of view. In fact, I was very struck by the architecture there also. Tragic thing is, 100 years ago or 115 years ago or so, it was burnt down. I believe the Germans loved to come up there for their vacations, and they gathered some money together and helped Little Norway rebuild the town of Ålesund, and they rebuilt the whole town in uniform Art Nouveau style. So it is a uniquely Art Nouveau town, and in that regard, it is certainly unforgettable rather than, as I put it, forgettable. In fact, there's a famous viewpoint from the mountains above Ålesund that you look down and you see the beautiful Art Nouveau town, all this uniform architecture because all really built in the same year, and then you've got island after island after island reaching out to finally the open sea, and it's one of the great experiences in Norway is to stand on that hilltop overlooking the town of Ålesund, A-L-E-S-U-N-D. And if you're Marilyn and if you're into Art Nouveau, well, then you're marveling at a very memorable city rather than, as I wrongly put it, a forgettable city. That's Allison, and that's Marilyn's feedback from Columbus, Ohio. Sandra's calling in from Long Island in New York. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, Rick. Oh, what a pleasure to speak to you.
Thank you. Oh, that's great. It's nice to be
able to. And I think I might have a little tip for some of the ladies that that drive.
Okay.
My first trip to Europe was back in 1967. I was in my 20s,
mm-hmm.
and I studied all the maps and the signage, so I would be okay, you know, going around, and we landed in Italy first, and then into Switzerland, and then we flew over to England, which really had me worried, because I didn't know if I could remember to stay on the left side of the road.
That's right. There'd be no adjustment in all those other countries, but as soon as you get to England,
no,
you got to remember.
So what I did, and I tell everyone that I know since then, I've told them, when they're going to drive in the British Isles, you know, I wear the biggest, clunkiest bracelet I can find on my left wrist, and hopefully that reminds me to stay over there.
Now, there's a clever idea. I've never encountered that, but that's a good one.
Oh, I've been doing it for years. I went back and forth to Europe for the, it was much cheaper back then. Last time was 2004.
You know, Sandra, after driving in Britain for a couple of weeks, I actually get so used to it that when I get home, I'd have to put the bracelet on my right-hand wrist.
Do you know when I back out of the driveway, I have to think twice of which side of the road to get on?
Isn't that a wonderful thing? You just got to be in a real humble mood when you're in Britain, because I always find if you're in a near head-on collision, I go, oh, I must be on the wrong side of the road, and then I scoot back over.
My cousin he was born in the States but raised there, and he still forgets which side of the street to stay on.
A lot of people are very nervous about driving in Britain, but I always say if you pick up the car, don't pick it up in downtown London, because then you're dealing with all this horrendous traffic. Mm. Pick it up at the airport or in a small town.
Pick it up right at the airport.
Yeah, pick it up at the airport. Then you're already in the countryside.
And later on, when I went with my husband, he looks at me and says, I'm not driving here. I said, that's okay. I'm used to it.
Good for you. All right. Well, I just think it's nice that when you're in a country where they drive on the left-hand side of the road, that you have a car designed to drive on the left-hand side of the road.
Yes.
Every once in a while.
I love shifting with my left hand, too. I think it's wonderful.
Every once in a while, you see a car on the continent from Britain, and the wheel's on the wrong side, and
mm-hmm.
I just think that would be really scary. So,
I love to watch all the English mystery shows on PBS, because I could see them driving on their right side of the road.
and they're not wearing those bracelets. All right, Sandra, thanks for your call and happy travels.
Great talking to you. I love your shows.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye now.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton, with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wilner. You too can be a caller on the show. There's a link on the radio page at ricksteves.com to send us your email address so that we can notify you of our next recording sessions and topics. Join us again next week for more Travel with Rick Steves.